Welcome to the Waffle Shop podcast with me, Taylor James. This is the podcast that gets people waffling about their mental health, coping mechanisms, life's minor inconveniences, and the music that soundtracks it all. So join me as I open up shop and have a waffle.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Waffle Shop podcast, the podcast where myself and a wide range of guests have a waffle about mental health, life's challenges, and those pet hates that really get on our nerves. I'm your host, Taylor James, so join me as I open up shop and have a waffle. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Waffle Shop podcast. Today I'm joined by the TV actress, self-development coach, and the founder of the Happy Me Project, Holly Matthews. Welcome to
Hello.
The Waffle Shop.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy you're here. I've wanted you on this show from literally very, very early days.
It took me a while
to kind of reach out because I was like, no.
That's so nice. Do you know what? I love the ethos of everything that you're doing. And when you told me about it, I just loved it. And it's, yeah, I mean, you've done amazing with it. You've done so incredible with it. And it's because it's real, right? It's because you reach out. Yeah, of course it is. And do you know what? My whole work in life has been in Newcastle, where I'm from. We say there's a saying called shy bairns getting out, right? Shy bairns. Bairn in Newcastle means kid. So if you don't ask, you don't get, right? And I've lived my whole life like that. If you don't have a go at something, you don't ask, and you don't get a bit cheeky sometimes and push your luck, you know, you don't know what doors are going to be opened. And actually,
that's exactly what's happening.
People don't ask. And then
and
people
if they say no, I just pull the cold, like, oh, my mum's poorly card. And they're like, oh,
nice.
Oh yes.
Straight
in there with the X Factor story.
Straight in there. Oh, lovely.
You know, we're in a pandemic. I can't turn up with like a dry ice machine and like a, you know, I can't do that. It's, you know, times are hard.
just drop the ill mom in there and then, yeah, that's it. Everyone's on the show. Is that how you've done this? You mentioned it a little bit, but you didn't really play on it with me. No.
Every time.
Just keep that in your locker. Keep that for safekeeping, that one.
Yep. Well, to be fair, it hasn't, well, a few people have said no, but I don't want to talk about those because that's negative.
We won't talk about those. Exactly.
I want to launch straight into your story because I think it's one that I really kind of familiarize myself with. Obviously, I know it's very different scenarios, but there's a few kind of moments throughout it that have really kind of made me feel like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one in that kind of situation that I'm in. And, you know, it's quite comforting knowing that, you know, there is not that I want other people to go through it, don't get me wrong, but
of course,
but you know, like it just makes it me feel a little bit more human.
And that's, I think that's why to talk about it, isn't it? Like that for me is why I talk about my own story, is because I know that other people are going through it. I'm not the only one that's going through it. You're not the only one that's going through it. And so if we can talk about this stuff, it makes us feel less alone.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I didn't know half this stuff existed. I didn't even know, you know, about, you know, you always hear it, like, I mean, probably from some of the TV shows that you've been in, you always expect, you know, those kind of things to happen in TV. So when it's actually happened to yourself, you're like, oh, okay, well, what do I do? What do I do now? Kind of thing.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I'm gonna throw it over to you if you don't mind, just to kind of give a bit of a background in terms of, you know, how and what you went through to get to where you are now.
Yeah. So my husband Ross had brain cancer. So but before that, I was a TV actress and I did shows like Casualty and things like that, as you said. So I was often in amongst like all this health, like related stuff and all this dramatic TV stuff. In fact, I did say once I eventually, if I do decide to go back doing TV, I just need to do comedy because I just feel like it attracted a lot of hospital stuff into my life. Casualty like 3 times in a short space of time. And suddenly like my husband had brain cancer. Like I'm not saying it's related at all, but it just felt like I should do comedy next. But yeah, so in 2014, my husband Ross, who was, we were 29 at the time, and he was diagnosed with brain cancer, and it was a complete shock. So before that, my husband was on the autistic spectrum. So when we have 2 children, so we'd recently, our second daughter would have been just about to turn 1 when he was diagnosed. So we were right in baby stage, and my other one was about to turn 3. And he'd started to experience depression and anxiety, and he was having what we assumed were forms of a panic attack.
Yeah.
What turned out to be focal seizures in his left hand. So that's where you have, it's like a tension in your hand. Your body feels a feeling of anxiety, but it's essentially a seizure. So when we went to the doctor with the symptoms, there was a lot of talk about, oh, potentially it's a panic attack, it's anxiety. Yeah. And with his diagnosis of autism, he was only diagnosed at 26. And the lady who diagnosed him said, look, you know, that you're having children before you start, you know, once this may be, you know, one, I think I was pregnant when he was diagnosed. And she said, you know, you do need to think about that the fast-paced change of early pregnancy may be difficult for him, because often autistic people find change difficult. And so when he started to experience this more prolonged anxiety and then more of a depression with our second, we put it down to, look, we've had 2 babies in a short space of time. It's all change. It's all go.
So it's a lot, isn't it? It's like huge life-changing kind of
huge life-changing events. Stuff. And so we kind of thought, well, this is anxiety. And we were dealing with the anxiety side of things. And we did all the, you know, the things that I do now. We, you know, talk about self-development stuff. And I would talk to him. And he was really bad. I mean, he was actually at one point at the point where he was like, I'm worried I'm going to do something stupid here. I'm going to like hurt myself. And we were, and actually when there's an episode of Casualty that I did, where it was a really serious episode, where I was playing a girl who was raped. And I actually can't watch the scenes on that because the crying in it is real, because I'd taken a call for him. I'd taken a call from him not long before doing the scenes, where he said, I needed to wake up our kids up, like to get up, because I was worried. I needed some perspective because he was that low. Now, what happened when he was diagnosed was this weird space of understanding of why that had happened. He had a brain tumor in his head pushing on a part of his brain. It was frontal lobe. It was pushing on parts of his brain that was affecting his mental health. And so actually there was a weird sense of obviously horror that it's brain cancer. That's the worst news you're going to get. You know, it's your brain. So it wasn't even, when I was doing all my research on Google, you know, the good old Google telling you what's wrong with your health, and I was looking for anxiety stuff and the symptoms I was putting in, it did come up with brain cancer, obviously, and your initial thought, I'd had no experience of cancer. I'd had no experience of anyone having this stuff. Thankfully for me, nobody at that time had cancer around me.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't where my head went. That wasn't my blueprint of the world. And so when it came up, I was like, he's 29.
It can't be that. Yeah, it can't be. People, I mean, the people that young don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we went into hospital on basically, I think I'd just done some filming for something. I came back home, he had a really intense headache. And we'd already spoken to the doctor. He was on a waiting list for a headache clinic to go and see somebody about these headaches he was having. They were really intense, like ice pick headaches. And on this day, he woke up, he was vomiting, headaches. I phoned the ambulance and just said, look, can we do a GP, what's called a GP liaison? You've got to get them in quicker. So yeah. You're not just going through accident emergency. And we got him to hospital. We were there all day. And honestly, with all the tests they were doing and everything, I assumed and kind of was feeling frustrated. I thought we were going to get the end of the day and they were going to go, it's anxiety, it's depression. Yeah. This is what things, because in reality, you know, that kind of stress and pressure can do all kinds of weird things to your body.
Both mentally all and physically. It's insane.
It's insane what can happen. And you can think, you know, you've got a sore tummy and it's like, sore tummy, is this me being a mum more than, is your tummy hurt? You need to go to the toilet. you know, you can have a sore stomach and then you can, and it can be related to the fact you've been worried all day. So, you know, we know it's physical. So I thought we'd get to the end of the day and they would just go, look, I'm really sorry, but we're going to pass them on to see a counsellor or something like that. And so I was thinking that. What happened is around 8 o'clock at night, we've been there all day. It's dark. In fact, a guy next to us in the bay had died, which was horrendous. God. An old guy had just died. So that just happened. And so we were like, oh shit, that's really bad. Like someone just died. And we were sat there and then the curtains opened. And I have spoken about this at a conference before, because I believe that doctors need some severe training in delivery and how they deliver bad news.
Yes, yep. You are speaking to the right person here. Yes.
And obviously we actually talk, we know the same hospital. So it was absolutely this. And I was actually able to speak to brain surgeons and oncologists at some major like event a couple of years back where they just gave me the floor and let me tell them off basically and go, you want to learn? You need to learn how to deliver better. So they walked in and the two doctors, no warning, no anything, just said, I'm really sorry, Mr. Blair, but you have an egg-sized tumor in your brain. We'll look at the possibility of brain surgery, chemo, but if there's nothing else that we can do, we'll just keep you comfortable. And we were just like,
oh my God.
Lord. We were just like, okay. And his mom was actually with us as well. I looked at him and as always, you know, just... Ross very much just lived in the moment, and I looked at him and he went, all right, what's next? What do we do? And at every stage, both me and my husband were very, as a couple, from the second we met, we were a couple and we were pals, like proper pals. We kicked about together, both entrepreneurs, both worked for ourselves. We didn't spend a day, but we just laughed. Like we used to say, those that play together, stay together, have a laugh with each other, trust each other. Just like with everything that. We were just mates and ruthlessly so, you know, he was autistic. There was no like gray area in what came out of his mouth. Like it was black and white. Like he would tell you, you look like a hot mess. And he would also tell you it looked amazing. And also everybody else outside of the house, which was very funny at times, but also offended a lot of people. So anyone that has stories about my husband, certainly in Coventry, there will be many.
Barred from this pub. And yeah.
When I first came to Coventry, I think he slept with most of Coventry. So when I got there, when people were like, is his girlfriend? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, oh, okay. And then we'd walk away and I'd say, have you slept with her? And he'd be like, yeah. And a friend. And for God's sake. So yeah, he was prolific. But he, you know, he was a very honest person. The way he lived was very honest. And our relationship was very like raw in many ways. Like we just were what we were. And there was no, you know, so from the whole time of him having brain cancer and going through, he had two brain surgeries and chemo and radiotherapy and all that stuff in between. He dealt with it at source and he didn't read the stuff that he was supposed to have, the symptoms. He didn't think about brain cancer. And he would just say, look, they tell me I've got cancer. I can't fucking feel it. I'm just going to live my life. And I think the hardest thing actually for him was the not being able to drive. That was the most difficult, because that's you've been able to look after yourself.
It's like your sense of kind of freedom, isn't it?
It's your freedom
now been taken away. Yeah.
And that was really, really difficult for him. But we found ways around it. You know, he was riding a bike. I was getting shouted at in the car as the driver. that was great. But we dealt with it. And so we never actually, it's very weird. Like Ross had, brain cancer for 3.5 years before in July 2017 he died. And for us, up to that point, yes, we'd had all this stuff. And if you wrote it down and you really lived in those moments and really assessed what went on, you know, certainly things like seizures and things like that were really quite traumatic. They're never nice because they're so out of left field and you never expect them. And they're always different. And it's very jarring as the carer, the person that's there. But other than that, we lived our lives fully. And actually the benefit of, and maybe you've experienced this as well, the benefit of having such hard, horrible news. And we always knew that, like Ross would say, look, I'm giving this all I've got, right? I'm going to give it proper. I'm going to do all I've got to do. He had his second brain surgery purely because he was like, I don't want you guys to think that I didn't give it a shot. I don't want you ever to worry that I didn't try. It was always thinking forward, thinking about us that were potentially to be left behind. And it was never like, oh, this is like it was never done for. He was always trying to like, you know, keep at it and try everything that needed to be done. But he also didn't obsess about it. And he just went, look, this will get me eventually. This will kill me.
Yeah.
It might not be now. I'm going to keep going as long as I can. But reality is like, I should be dead. Like that's what he would say. And even when, you know, in his second brain surgery, which was 2016, and we have the conversation, and he was a little bit, it's the first time I ever saw him nervous was before that second surgery. He really was not that person. And he was like, he was worried about coming out of that disabled rather than him dying. He was just worried that. He basically said to me, as bluntly as he would always say, he just said, I just don't want you feeding me fucking yogurt. Like, I just can't imagine. Like, I just don't want you feeding me yogurt. Yeah. Like, some, like, snap it. That's just what he didn't want. And, and the truth is, no, that's our biggest fear as humans, as adult humans. We don't want to be someone's burden. And this is
what, like, the amount of kind of conversation, and I don't know, I was getting a little bit emotional then, because it's like, again, this is like the first time where I'm hearing someone else have these conversations. And I think until you're in that kind of scenario, yes, it may sound like, you know, like they're being brave, and it's kind of there's that element of kind of, oh, you know, they're trying, they're doing this. But when you're in that position and you're watching someone basically kind of fight for their life, you see it in their face sometimes. Like you don't know, you know, what's going on. And if they're kind of in that frame of mind of I'm ready, or, you know, if this is going to happen, the fact that when they're in that situation, their first thoughts are, but I don't want to leave you behind. What am I doing this for you? And it's, I don't know, it's so commendable, because obviously my mom does the same thing. She's like, you know, I'm doing this for you.
I think it is emotional. And I think we, you know, anyone that's experienced that kind of big loss or big decision, it's real. Like that stuff that is hard, you know. And I remember when we, after he had his second brain surgery, a few months after, we went back to the surgeon, and he actually said, look, I'm really sorry, but it has started to grow again. Like we might look at it, but it was just, and it was actually just before his brother had decided to put his wedding forward from the, I think it was supposed to be in the new year. Yeah. And he put his wedding forward because he wanted him to be part, and he was just getting a bit concerned. We just wanted him to be there. And actually at the wedding, we knew then that it had started to grow again, and that they were potentially, we knew that it already within 2 months started to grow again. And we knew actually that's really bad news. So we had the whole time at that wedding, we're keeping that kind of secret from everybody. And I remember after the news of that, we sat in the car park, and I remember because someone was tooting at us because we had the lights on, so they wanted the car park in space. I was like, back off. We were sat there, and I remember Ross saying to me, okay, we sat for a bit, and he was like, right, so where do you want to live? Where do you want to be? We need to work this out now. Like, and I was like, I'm not ready for that conversation. Like, I was like, I'm just not ready. Like, you know, you almost want to fight what the inevitable. And actually, once you've got over that, and don't ever, you know, I've cried all the tears. Like, it's not, I think sometimes when people hear me talk so openly about this, maybe they imagine I'm stoic. I'm not, I'm an emotional person. I just also believe that no tears in the world are going to change it. So eventually, after the tears and after, you know, feeling sad, and eventually you've got to go, okay, not this doesn't do. And I remember, and I've spoken about this a lot, but I just remember for me that I had a real clarity moment in that when he was first diagnosed and I came home and I was actually by myself, and obviously at the beginning everyone's around you, and I walked in our own house and I looked around the house and suddenly everything in it, and I don't know if you've, I think most people who've gone through these big diagnoses and the, you know, big stuff have experienced this feeling of almost, it's almost like a weightlessness, maybe like a feeling of like nothing around me matters nor makes sense other than this thing in this moment. And I remember walking in the house and seeing mundane, normal stuff, the post on the table, like stuff, messy stuff that had been left out, washing, whatever, and just thinking, none of this makes any sense. And I was actually booked to do a film after my casualty episodes had gone out on TV just before his diagnosis, and I was set to do a film playing a footballer's wife or something like that. And I remember I had to, my first thought was, I need to ring my agent to cancel, I need to say I can't do that film. And then my thought went, I don't know why I ever wanted to do that. I don't care at all about acting. And bear in mind, as an actor, you're so driven. I started acting at 11 years old, my first professional job at 11. All I ever wanted to do was be on TV, in films. I worked my ass off and I did very well in what I was doing. But to be that driven at something and then something to shake the core values of who you are, it was that feeling. And I remember coming in the house, I sat on the kitchen floor and I cried and I cried and I really let it out. And then it got to a point where I just thought, this makes no difference. And if I want to be happy and I want to get through this and I want to get everybody else through this, then it's only me that's going to do it. Nobody else. So do get up.
So, because I mean, that whole, you know, what you just said is, again, so relatable to me, because it was just like, okay, all of a sudden, like my mom was kind of like the matriarch of the family. Like she was the one who kept everyone together. And obviously this woman was now not there. So I felt like I had to be that person. I had to step into these shoes. I had to keep the family going. I had to kind of hear someone else in possibly the worst moment of their life. You know, I can't even imagine, well, I can kind of imagine where your head is, but obviously that's your situation. But to get that kind of second wind, like I think you're the first person who I've spoken to who actually has had that bit of a kick. Like I remember standing at the end of those kind of that corridor in intensive care, and like people were going down to see my mom, they were coming up, they were crying, and I was like, I was the one giving them the hug, saying like, oh, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And then like you said, like there was a real turning point where it's like, do you know what, I was coming home from like work and I was seeing, like you said, like the letters on the table. I was seeing like, you know, washing up in the sink. I was just like, it was like anger, if anything. So just like,
this means for continuing while you're dealing with that.
And this is what, like now, especially like I have this thing, because you're around that kind of time it was happening, you know, like my friends were like buying their first homes and this, that, and the other. And they were like, and don't get me wrong, that's like, it's huge for them. But like, I remember getting so angry and just think like, if you honestly think that's all that matters, then it was just this real horrible angry bubble. And it was like you said, I can't even think, I think it was the conversation I had with my sister, you know, saying, you know, mom isn't going to make it, seeing her in that such a vulnerable state and kind of crying, like I never want to be in that situation again. And I think it was that actually said like, you know what, enough of the fucking crying now. Like, we don't know if what's going to happen next, you know, worry about it if and when it happens. But what matters now is making, you know, everything as right as it possibly could and can be for us. And I don't know where that kind of energy comes from. I mean, God knows.
I think it certainly comes from when you've got people to care for and you're looking out for other people. I think there's a weird, because you're not really necessarily doing it for yourself. You're doing it to make sure everyone's okay. And actually there's some benefit in that. And I've tapped into that a lot. And I've always said that for me personally, they say people do things in times of inspiration and desperation. And I'm a backs against the ropes. When you're backs against the ropes, when I'm there, I will come out swinging. And I think that's something I know not everybody can tap into that, but I think one of the biggest, in terms of self-development, and that's for your listeners, that's what I do now, is my work is self-development. Some people call it life coaching. I work with people on this kind of stuff in a very real way. And for me, I think it's tapping into that. There's something called a helper high. and you actually get a kickback from helping other people, right? So if you can, in those worst moments, if you can be the organizer, if you can be, you know, the person that keeps people going, if you can, you know, can connect the dots for people, if you, whatever it is, that actually helps you to work through it. And even, you know, where we're recording this in pandemic world, in pandemic time, and at the beginning of the pandemic, I actually slipped into watching the news because everybody was, I don't watch the news because I don't need that kind of negative in my life.
Exactly, like, the same.
in journalism, they say if it bleeds, it leads, right? Yeah. That's the negative. Like, if it's so miserable that someone was murdered or killed, it leads the story. Like, that's miserable. Yeah. That's what we get from the news. We don't get happy news. So I started watching the news during the pandemic, and it wasn't something I did, and certainly was, I'm so protective of my brain and what I let in. I started to feel rubbish, and I was like, what, why am I feeling so overwhelmed by everything? And it was because I wasn't watching the news, and I was like, I'd zoomed out so much I couldn't see straight. Whereas I was like, right, okay, so in my worst part of my life, what did I do? And what I did in that time was I didn't consume, I created. Why I use that time to create, exactly what you're doing, right?
This is exactly why I wanted you on the show, because it's like you've said in the past, and you know, I've watched, you know, many of your videos, and it's like, you know, through this whole kind of, people like to wallow in their self-pity. People like to have people feeling, they like to be the sob story.
Yeah.
And with yourself, like, it was like, no, I'm not going to be that person that you all want me to be. I'm turning this round. And I fucking love that. Like, I think it's incredible.
To me, like, I just look at it and go, look, I want to be happy. I want my life to be good. I want my children to have a good life. I want people around me to be. And actually, I've recently been working with a really excellent marketing company who I'm going to plug slightly because they're a new marketing company called Awesome Sauce, and they're based around in Coventry and Leamington. So worth plugging when they're local.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sat down with them this week, and we were talking about my next steps with my business and sort of where we, you know, why do I do what I do? You know, that's the core of business coaching. Why do you do what you do? And my thing for me is my biggest driver is freedom, right? I want to be happy and I want to be free. And that means for me, that means working for myself. That means being able to get up and do what I want every day. That's what freedom looks like to me. Not the same for everybody. But for me also, it's not enough for me just to be happy and free. It's not enough. I don't know why that is, but it's not. I have to, there's a drive in me that wants to help other people to have that same understanding. Now, it's not one size fits all because we're all individuals. Yeah. So when I talk about self-development stuff, it is about personal responsibility. You know, that's why I hasten to say life coach, because as we were saying at the beginning of, before we started recording, life coach to me feels like I'm telling you how to do your life. Like,
your bingo's out on Friday.
No. Actually, my next door neighbor, if she ever listens to this, she tells me when the bins go out. In fairness, I don't take personal responsibility for my own bins. I have good neighbors. But, you know, like, you know, for me, it's about myself. My form of self-development is about looking the tiger in the eye. It's about personal responsibility. It's about knowing what your own triggers are. It's about knowing how you work yourself out of the shit. It's about knowing that it's okay on the days when you need to sit eating chocolate in your pants watching Netflix. And they're important days as well as the days when you feel good. But it's always, for me, it's about going, look, I'm not going to tell you that life is going to be brilliant all the time. I'm not about toxic positivity where like, everything's fine, let's just smile and think positively. No, that doesn't, that might work for some people, I don't know. But for majority of people,
it's like a false sense of like security and hope though, isn't it? It's like, oh, no one is that happy all the time. Like, even in like Disney like films, like everyone's like,
oh god, they're miserable.
Look at what happens to them.
Well, all my kids, every time we watch Disney, they're like, dead parent. And I'm like, yeah, it's a dead parent. And of course, there's always a dead parent. Like, we make a joke, it's miserable.
Sorry.
It's like, it's gallows humor. Like, when you go through tough stuff, like, you've got to have that kind of gallows humor. Like, that's what it's about. But life isn't like that. You know, I did a TED talk, was it last year or the year before? I can't remember now. This year's felt like 10 years, so I've no idea what year
we
are.
I agree with you there.
But my TED talk was called Tough Luck, Why Accepting Life's Hardships Will Set You Free, or something like that. I've forgotten the title. But basically, the point of the TED talk was that by accepting life's unfairness. That was the word. By accepting life's unfairness, because it is unfair. Like, it is unfair. There's loads of unfairness. There's not. There isn't equality. There isn't all of that. And do you know what? Worrying about that and trying to change that with, I'm not saying don't try and change inequality in certain sectors, but what I'm saying is by you looking at your life and going, but I don't want this to happen, when it's absolutely happening, it does nothing but cause you pain. And in Buddhism, not that I'm a Buddhist, but I did used to go to a Buddhist meditation class, which was actually really, really good. And it wasn't fluffy. It was, we would do a meditation and then we would talk about a topic, like getting angry, why we get angry. And then we would discuss it and debate it, and everyone would talk about it. And then we'd do another meditation. It was actually really helpful. But they talked about some of the Buddhist principles, which essentially do interest me, because it's not about a God as such. So a lot of the stuff is quite interesting philosophies. And they talk a lot about that. When I first went there, I actually thought it sounded quite negative, but they said that essentially life is full of pain. Like, it's full of pain. True. Every single day, life is painful, right? You wake up, you feel a bit tired, you didn't sleep well, somebody offends you, somebody cuts you up in the car. Like, this stuff happens throughout your day that makes you feel pain, right? But as soon as you can accept that and go, life is full of pain, what you can then do is look for the good, right? And so I say a lot to people, and I say to my kids as well, look, yeah, that's happened. I'm not minimizing it. Cry, have your thing, work through, what can we do? What do we need to do to go for a walk, whatever? Whatever you need to do to make you feel good, because that's individual to you. But then all you've got to do is work yourself to the next good thing. Because as much as people with a more negative mindset want to go, everything is rubbish in life, yes, there's loads of shit stuff in life, and there's loads of pain in life, as we've just said. But you know what? There also is loads of great stuff. There's
what is, and to quote my favorite rapper here, and
lovely,
people laugh at me all the time for this, but he in one of his songs says negatives to positives. I think he rhymes it with Lindsay Lohan, but Pitbull said it all those years ago. And
you know, Pitbull is actually very, very positive and inspirational. And
exactly. He's a huge inspiration of mine.
Do you know what, Pitbull? I've got a big thing about gritty people and people who hustle and get up and try again. Like, I've always been fascinated with those people. In fact, and I'm not saying she's necessarily the grittiest, but I remember being a kid and the Spice Girls were big, because I'm super, like, 35.
We're all 90s kids. Went to see them last year for the Rico.
Yeah. Do you know what? I couldn't do it. It felt too sad to go back. No. I didn't do it. I'm the worst girl out there. Like, I'm just not. Like, I didn't watch Sex in the City and I didn't go to the Spice Girls concert. Like, I've just missed out. I'm so sorry, everyone. But I just, you know, I was Sporty Spice. That's who I was, obviously, like, at the time. But the Spice Girls, when I used to, I remember, because I wanted to be an actress from really young, and I was obviously really interested in how people, and they were super, like, phenomenon, right? They're a big global phenomenon. And no matter what, you look back now and go, God, that looks so cheap and tacky. Now, with these eyes, in the 90s, that was a phenomenon. These were girl power. They were quirky, they were interesting, they were fun. And I remember reading Jerry Halliwell's book and reading her story. And it was all about how actually, you know, Jerry Halliwell had been in the circuit for a long time. She'd grafted a lot. She'd modeled, she'd done promotional modeling, she'd done this, that. And I remember thinking, that's so interesting. Like, she didn't just go to drama school and then made it. Like, and it was the first time I realized, you know, I grew up in Newcastle. There wasn't drama schools and stuff. Like, so I started on TV at 11 on a show called Biker Grove.
And oh my God, I didn't know you were in Biker Grove.
I was in Biker Grove. So I grew up on Biker Grove for 7 years. So that's where I started TV. I was, yeah. And that was also a phenomenon.
I really should have done my research before you came
up. Totally should. I can't believe I didn't drop that in. I know, what a show. What a show. And so I grew up all my awkward teenage years on TV. But while I was in that, you know, like, it was normal kids. We didn't have all the same stuff. So when I'm like looking at people in Hollywood and they're all glamorous and they did like the Disney Channel, like, and we were like just scruffy normal kids like that did like a Grove. It was very normal. When I read Jerry Halliwell's book, I found her very get up and keep trying. And it really interests me. And resilience has always interested me. And certainly as an actor, you get knocked back 100 times before you get a one. Yeah. Or even if you do well, it's a lot of knockbacks. You can't take yourself too seriously. The actors that do tend to go down really big mental health issues. So that's actually how I got, when I was growing up on TV, I got into self-development then because, yeah. And God knows why, my dad was a welder. My mum worked in a bank. Like, it wasn't like I was growing up with people chanting and talking about crystals and stuff. But I knew growing up on TV, suddenly I was this kid on the TV, and I knew that I didn't want to feel shit, and I felt shit, and I had real bad body dysmorphia. I thought that if I stepped out the house that people would faint with how ugly I was, and like, oh, wow. I just couldn't bear it. Like, because essentially, like, you look at it from a psychologist's point of view, every day I went to work and people put makeup on my face and corrected my face every day. Yeah. And then I was on TV in a time where we didn't have social media. Nobody was on TV. There wasn't reality TV. It was a big deal. Like, at the height of Biker Grove during my time, we were getting, you know, 1.3 million viewers, which actually by today's standards is actually still a lot.
It's still really good, yeah.
It's still really good because at the time there wasn't as many channels. Very few people could afford to have Sky TV. And so
do you feel quite lucky now, like looking back at kind of with all those kind of things, you know, like the body dysmorphia, especially around social media, do you feel quite lucky that we were before that generation of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram? Because it scares the shit out of me now.
And a friend of, and not saying this was the only reason, but a prime example is what we're seeing in reality TV. And a friend of mine, Sophie Graydon, who was in Love Island and sadly killed herself. Not saying that was the only reason, but there was such a lot of horrible, horrible comments on social media. And I have said this for a long time. My tiny modicum of fame that I've had in my life and my platform, the reality is from 11 years old I've had a platform, whether it was on TV, whether it was on social media. And so it's a weird space to be in, to live like that. Like, I don't know any different, so it's not weird, but it's been such a slow trajectory, and it's had its peaks and troughs at times. Actually, it's a much nicer place, and I see young people look into reality TV like, oh, just want to be famous. And like, you've got no idea how nothing that is. It's nothing. Like, I have done some really big stuff in my time that, you know, those people that like desperately hanker after that fame would love. And I'm like, it doesn't, do you know what, when we're talking about the stuff we're talking about, when it comes to life and death and the real stuff, when babies are born, when people are in love, like, that's what matters. Fame is nothing. It's nothing. The only thing, if you have a platform, it's a great way to be able to do good stuff. And so I've always tried 100%. To use my platform to reach to give myself a nice life first, but also to help other people as well. But for growing, I'm just so lucky that I didn't, but it also helps me to help people now, because I lived in both worlds. I was in a unique position that I actually did have a platform before people of my age didn't. And so, you know, I was known as the kid off TV, and I would be on, you know, whatever, Live and Kicking and things like that, and do all of that.
You're
kind
on
of
Live
stuff.
And Kicking as well.
Yeah, just like when you like go and do chats and that. Live and Kicking was a good show.
I really should have done that thing. Wasn't SMTV Live?
Didn't do SMTV. No, without God, debt, no, I didn't. No, I did like SMTV.
That was
a
big one.
I think I was I finishing up Biker then? I can't remember. But yeah, I did it from sort of till about 2001, 2000. I was 18 when I left, and then I went to go and sign with Sony. So I did singing, did Top of the Pops and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh my God. So you've done it all.
I've lived 100 lives. It hasn't been like, I really feel like that. And at 35, it's like, there's no simple way of explaining how I've got to this point.
You're a bit of a career gypsy.
I'm absolutely, like, I've just hustled, and all I've known, like, I really think this is important for young people to understand. I say to my kids a lot, like, you don't have to be one thing forever. This is not the 1960s or 70s or even 80s. Like, you don't get a job for life, guys. Like, but what you can do, the great thing about the internet and this connection that we have in this world, is you can decide to be whatever you want to be.
Even a bag for life isn't for life. It's all a lie. It's all a lie.
It's a terrible lie.
Exactly.
It's a terrible lie.
I'm on to you, Tesco.
Exactly. Well, I've my kids
and at the supermarket.
All apply. Yes. Please sponsor. Please sponsor us, and I'll say that your bag for life is for life. But yeah, that's it. You know, like, people have got to realize you don't have to be one thing forever. And actually, it's far more interesting to find the things that you love. And whether you're obsessed with, I don't know, biro pens and gardening, or you love singing and acting, whatever it is, find your love and make something. You know, you hear people like, I don't know if you follow Gary Vee, who talks a lot about, he talks about social media a lot and is very much in marketing and social media. But one of the things, you know, he's always saying to people, like, people laugh at young kids starting YouTube channels. Yeah. They're making millions. You can
and this,
laugh.
Do you know what? This is one of the things, and it's not, I don't even know why, but I get defensive as if they're like my family. But when people slag off the Kardashians, like, don't get me wrong, I don't agree with everything they do, but they have, well, literally worked their asses off, and now they're the most famous family in, you know, if not the world. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
I feel like, well, you know, people will always kind of point and laugh until you're doing well, and then exactly. They want to know you.
100%. Listen, I've had it all during my the different things that I've done, and I just secretly smile to myself, because you know what? It doesn't matter. As long as you're living your life in a way that the values sit well with you and you feel good about what you're doing, the rest of the world will point and laugh, because one, it doesn't match their blueprint of the world. Yeah. Two, they're scared to do things like that themselves, and it's much easier to laugh. And it's okay. You don't have to dismiss them. You don't have to defend your position. You just have to go, this is what I'm doing. Like, and I think, you know, the young people now are in such a great position, but they also have to be very, very protective of their mindset and understand. Like, I have a real understanding, and I'm tempted to make a documentary about this, because I know it's been done before, but I have such a unique positioning with my understanding of it, in that the whole filtering and the whole fake and all that kind of stuff that we see on social media has such a negative impact on everybody, young and old. And even people of our age have no idea how much stuff has changed. And I have a position that I understand that everything is fake. I mean, everything that we see is manipulated. And I also think I'm comfortable with magazines sometimes making things look more artistic. Like, if there's a cover of Vogue, right, I don't expect it. And I'm not necessarily in the majority of my thinking on this, but I'm okay with things looking artistically perfect. There's sometimes a place for that. If, you know, I know we're in this space now where we're going completely the other way. We want stretch marks and spots and everything. And there's a great place for that as well, because that's important, because we're real people with veins on our face and blackheads and all of that's normal. But there's also a space for things to be almost otherworldly. Back in the day, we used to have, you know, Elvis and Marilyn, and they were otherworldly. They were so untouchably famous. And now we've got a Kardashian taking the bins out. Like, that feels a little bit too real for me sometimes. Like, it's nice.
You don't even take your bins out.
I know, it's true. I do now. She just reminds me. I'm such a bad person. But it's good to, you know, it's good to have that. But then what worries me is that normal everyday people who don't have a platform, don't have a business, don't have any reason to perfect their stuff do. And I had a conversation. I did Lorraine Kelly, the last time I did Lorraine Kelly show last year. And I was sitting with a makeup artist who happened to be from Durham, so from my neck of the woods. And so I was chatting to her, and we were just talking, and we got on to talking about a similar subject. And she said, oh yeah, she said, one of my friends, and my jaw nearly hit the floor with this, because this was a new level for me. She said, one of my friends will send me her photographs before she posts it onto social media to check that she hasn't doctored it so much that she's unrecognizable. I mean, that is so depressing.
That's extreme. That is.
That's so. But you know what? We
what's
think
that doing inside,
actually,
though?
Every time you do that, you're telling yourself you're not good enough. Yeah. Every single time. Like, I've showed my daughters who are 9 and 7. I've showed them Facetune. We talk about this a lot. I say to them, look, everything is. And the girls will sometimes say, that's kind of like perfect, isn't it? They've made it perfect. Like, yeah, they made it perfect. And that's really an important thing, because what happens is that because Janet from work does it on her holiday pics, Sarah from work's got to do the same, because she doesn't want to put her real hard depicts in with her roles and with her cellulite, because she doesn't feel good enough to post that. But Janet from work still has cellulite and roles. She just took hers out with Facetune. And I'm not even blaming Janet, because Janet's a product of this whole system of this perfection and not seeing anything real. I once had an experience. One of my friends was on Emmerdale and in the Daily Star. I don't know where I was, because I wouldn't buy the Daily Star, but I was flicking through the newspaper and I saw a picture of someone else reading the headlines and whatever. And I saw this picture of this girl like sprawled out in a bikini. I read that paper wherever I read it a few times before I read the name, and it was my friend's name under it. And I was like, that's
Did you not even recognize her?
I didn't even recognize her. They had changed her body type to quite athletic, and they changed her body type to really sort of a feminine, soft, like curvaceous look. They just changed her face. Like it, I remember actually Daily Star as well. Years ago, I did a photo shoot for them, and I was there when all the glamour girls were there. I mean, don't even think, do they have that now? Glamour models are not a thing. They're very much a thing of the past, aren't they? But these glamour girls, they'd just done a shoot. And so I was in the room when they were touching up the photographs. And I watched them take half this girl's jaw off on this like thing, just totally changed her face. And so how do we live up to that when those people who've done that photo shoot, who are beautiful girls, have then read their stuff in the newspaper, all excited to see themselves, and they've had half their jaw taken off? How does that make anybody feel?
But you see, even seeing it now, even like with men, like I've got, I'm not going to say who it is, but it's quite clear that he does it. Like in every one of his photo, he literally makes his teeth like peroxide white, and I was like, they are not your teeth.
No.
They're not.
I don't want to like meet somebody them to go, oh god, like you don't look like what you're
like, what have you been eating?
I know, you're right, like what's going on? Like I don't want that. And I also don't want it, like what we have to really understand, and this is the thing with how our brains work when it comes to feeling good, right? Our brains work perfectly well, but it's about what we put in. If you put junk food in your body and expect to have a six pack, you're dreaming. If you pump your brain full of negative images and crap that makes you feel bad, your brain is going to go, well, that's what Holly wants to see more of. I don't want to see more of that.
It's like that weird Instagram thing that like listens to your conversation. It's like if you're constantly like saying these things out loud, Instagram or Facebook will pick up on them, and when you're scrolling through, you're like, oh, there's that, how does it know that? Your brain is no different.
Your brain is exactly the same as it's like an algorithm. There's something actually, if we're going to be all like clever in that boat, it's something called the RAS, which is called the reticular activating system. And what that is a set of nerve endings. And it's basically like you're a bouncer at the door, right? So it's letting in what you keep, basically what you spend your time focusing on, what you believe about yourself and what you believe about the world. Our brains run on something called confirmation bias. And that just means we like to be right. So if we keep pumping in, the world is a crap place, the world is horrible, nobody likes me, I'm a shit loser, right? If you keep saying that to yourself over and over again on repetition, and what your brain, the RAS opens its door, come on in then. And what it lets in is information that backs that up. Right. So it will let in every time. So as an example, let's say you're a person that really thinks you're a loser and everybody hates you. And that's what you've, for whatever reason, you've got to that point. Right.
Yeah.
Then you walk past someone on the street and you wave at them and they don't wave back. Awkward moment. Right. If you are a negative person like that. Right. And you will think your RAS will open up and go, come on in. Let's pop that into the pile of you're a loser and nobody likes you. Right. If you have trained, and it is about training yourself, if you've trained your brain to have high self-esteem, I've said I did not have high self-esteem about the way that I look. I have really high self-esteem about the way I look now. And it's not because I've changed the world. All right, everybody grows up a bit, but that's not why. I could quite easily have gone through all of my life feeling rubbish about myself, no matter what I look like. It's not. It's because I did the work on the inside of me.
Yeah.
And what happened, if I walked past someone that didn't wave at me, I think, oh, they must have missed me. They must be busy. They're in their own world. Like, I wouldn't take that person. Yeah, I was like, what? Oi,
exactly. I was in Biker Grove.
Don't you know? Drop that in. No. And they'd be like, what is that? You're 35-year-old woman. Like, what is that show? I'll say, Google it. Anton Deck were in it. But you know, like this is all about, you know, what we let in our brain. And this is so fundamental to, in terms of my self-development stuff, the stuff I talk about, That's all it's about. It is a rocket science. Like, we think it's really complicated. Our brains are actually, they're amazing and really simplistic. Like, we have a choice about how we want to live our lives. We, even when we feel like we don't, and I know we're sometimes in a position, and you might be people in this that are going, no, but I'm really going through hard stuff. I don't have any money. I grew up in a rubbish area. I don't have a support family. I hear it all. I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's easy, but you know what you can do about some of that stuff? Fuck all. Nothing. You can't decide where you are born, right? That's just, you dropped on this planet, right? You could be born in the depths of the Sahara. I don't know if that people can be born. Can there be born there? Right. You could be born
I imagine it's very hot.
It's probably quite hot. And you could be born there and you could be singed. you can be born anywhere in this world, and we don't have a choice in that. And you don't have a choice with the family that you brought into. There's nothing you can do about that. But at a point when you're a fully functional adult, then you have to make some decisions. And I'm not saying they're easy, because sometimes they're really hard and really unfair. And you might look to other people and think, well, they've had it easier. And they have, and they might have. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do. So you can bang your head against the wall going, oh, well, I just wish it wasn't this. But it is. So now what? Yeah. Now what are you going to do about it? And I know that sounds like, you know, tough talk to people, and they might think I've...
But people need that. I completely relate to it, because I can sit here all day thinking like, oh, you know, I'm really sad. This has happened. I haven't had the best of childhood. I don't live in the nicest of house. Who's going to change it? The people who I'm moaning to, they're not going to change it. So it falls on me. So am I going to waste my time moaning about it? Or am I going to start working on it to get to the things that I want to do? Because like, exactly. You're the master of your own destiny at the end of the day. Like, cut the shit. Stop whinging. If you want something to change that bad, you're going to have to start taking that first step to get into where you need to be.
Absolutely. And along the way, there'll be obstacles. But what I would say, you know, if you can work out, okay, what do I want it to look like? Even if that changes, right? Because it will. Things change. You, what you like changes. Like you say, right, this is my end goal. And your end goal might be, I want a normal house with a nice family, and I want to be surrounded by love, right? That might be the pinnacle of your aspirations, and there's absolutely nothing more beautiful in the world. There's nothing. Or it might be that you want to be a multi-millionaire and you want to live in the Hollywood Hills, or I don't know, right? You want to, whatever, right? It doesn't matter what it is, because each of us has our own dreams and destinies. And what I'm going to say is, you can get to both of those. You can take steps, and depending on where you are, some it is harder or it's easier or whatever else. But you have to understand, once you know what that is, and you focus your mind on, right, what are the steps that I need to take to get there? Who can I get to help me? Maybe you need to engage and have a coach that's going to mentor you, or you need to, like I did this week, I think, right, my next stage for me, my business is up leveled, certainly even in lockdown, everything's gone up again. I've got some big things happening. So now I go, okay, so I've been doing a lot of the market myself. Now I want to work with a marketing agency to see what they can do to help me to that next step.
Yeah.
It might be that you go, right, for me, it could be that you want to lose weight and you feel unhealthy and you don't feel good about that. Okay, so what do you need to do? What do you need to, you know, change about your lifestyle? Who can you emulate? You know, can you get some advice of somebody? Can you go to the gym? Can you get a trainer? What can you do? Because there are some things that are in our control. There's no point focusing on what you can't control. It doesn't make it. It's like, again, going back to the Buddhism thing. Like, I'm a very visual person. So this is very good for visual people. Like, I have this in my head. So what we do sometimes as people is, we're gluttons for punishment, right? We like to feel pain. It's weird, like sensitive.
100%.
Comfortable with it. When we felt pain for a long time, you've gone through ill health, you've gone through looking after somebody, you've gone through grief, you're used to that space of pain and almost like an addiction to drama. Like, you see it all the time. So in Buddhism, they talk about, and I'm totally paraphrasing, and in the Buddhist out there will be like, that's totally not what said, but like, this is what I
do. Have a high Buddhist
do you listener. Thought so
yes
yeah thought so. I knew it. Definitely Buddhist monks are listening. They might be, you've no idea. And so they essentially say to, like, hold what we do when we do that, it's like holding on to a hot piece of coal and then wondering why your hand's getting burnt, right? And what they say is, instead of fucking burning your hand, they don't say fucking burn. You know them Buddhists just going around, stop fucking burning your hands, in a Geordie accent. There might be a Geordie Buddhist
Buddhists that I'm talking to aren't actually Buddhists.
It was was just some bloke, right, in this pub was talking about coal. It was a miner. I'm from Newcastle. It was a miner. And so when you're doing that, like what they say essentially is just let go of the hot coal. Just stop holding on to it. And I know
that makes so much sense.
It makes sense, but we don't do it. So when I'm when I'm because we all go through it, we all go days when we're feeling a bit negative, we feel a bit sorry for ourselves, and we're feeling frustrated, and it's too hot as it's been the last few days, we feel a bit fed up. Instead of going into that space of like just rerunning all the shit stuff and thinking about that more and causing yourself pain, right?
Yeah.
Rerunning conversations where you should have said that thing and you didn't say it and you didn't tell the person to rock off when you want to. Instead of doing all of that stuff that we do to ourselves as human beings, and it's all of us. And for your listeners that are sat there thinking, it's just me that does this, I'm a lunatic. No, if you could see other people's brains, you would realize we're all mental. That we're all lunatics. And go through the same stuff, we just don't talk about it because it's embarrassing. So if you can visualize in those times, do you know what I'm doing here? It's that hot coal, I'm burning my own hand. You are holding the coal. Let go of the coal and do something nice for yourself. Run yourself a hot bath.
I feel like that's like the very British version of Frozen that you just described. I literally could lost all train of thought then. Where can people find you if they need that little bit of advice? And, you know, I've talked so much away from this episode, and I feel quite honored that you've took the time to obviously come on and talk to it. And I know for a fact that a lot of my listeners are going to do the same. So where can they find you?
So you will find me all over the social media. So I have a YouTube channel, which you mentioned, called Holly Matthews Online. So you can search me on Google and you'll find loads of old conversations. If you are going through grief, particularly in that somewhere, I vlogged from the hospice. I talked very openly. So you'll find lots. Yeah. And you'll also see the next steps. And hopefully for you, those of you that are really in the mix of grief, you will see a sense of hope. And you know, my family are doing really well. They're great. I've got great kids who are currently posting notes through the door.
Is that what the noise is?
That's what the noise is. Yeah, it's notes through the door and things.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on Instagram and Facebook really heavily, so I do a lot of stuff on there. On Facebook, I also have a very special little Facebook group, so you can come and join the Facebook group. So it's the Happy Me Project Facebook group. You can search. It's a private group. So the good thing about that space is that I go live in there twice a week. So Monday morning, if you want to kick up the arse on a Monday morning, I do
theme day.
So everybody needs it on a Monday morning. So do that on a Monday morning. And then on the third, just change to Thursday evening. It's a free-for-all question and answer. And that is essentially free life coaching. And I've been doing that. When we started lockdown, I went live every single day in that group for about 3 months. And that was purely because I knew that people were going through it and they needed to find some understanding of stuff. And a lot of people, a huge chunk of my audience, are people that have never looked to self-development before, and they thought it was a load of old shit, and they still didn't feel very good. And a lot of them will say, God, I never thought I would understand this. But I make it, it's about taking the fancy out of self-development. You don't have to sit in the hills in Bali and chant over crystals, unless you want to. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, how do you work around the fact that your nan's not very well, or, you know, the washing's got a bit too much and you feel stressed at the kids in lockdown. Like, that's what we're talking about in there. So people can join there. I also have some online courses, which are evergreen courses, which means they're available right now for you. And they're £30 and £60. So the Happy Me Project 1 is 21 days of audios. There's some videos. There's a workbook. It's been made deliberately. And this was made just after my husband died. And I made it because there was such a big audience going, how the hell are you getting through this?
Yeah.
And so for me, again, goes back to that create, not consume. I created this to give it to people and go, do this. And I had no expectation about that course at all. It was just, let's just put it out there. And then I can, if people need it, they can do that. I know it's really good. It's the fundamentals of what I do every day to not lose my head. So if you've, and this can be for somebody who's right down their self-development, you know, journey, they've done it loads. Sometimes you need to hear it in a different way. You know, you go to a aerobics class, you don't just do one class and go, that's me done. I know aerobics now, I've done it. You go back.
I went to an intensive fitness class. I don't remember was like boot camp kind of thing, went once,
you're like, not sick, for me,
never go again.
I've done it, completed.
Take that off the list.
complete some things. So they've got that one. And then the Happy Me Project 2 was launched the beginning of this year. The Happy Me Project 2 is about self-belief and confidence. So it's the inner work. It's why do you believe this about yourself? Why don't you have this inner core belief? We talk all about that kind of stuff. And then also from my acting experience, and also I've worked a lot with high-end, top-end business executives on their body language, and how they look good. So it's actually also, how do you look confident? Because It's all well and good doing all the inner work, but actually still walking around meek like a wallflower. The world will respond to you in exactly the same way if that's the case. So you need both in tandem. So that course is also available. And again, £30 the first one, £60 the second. You can do them separately. You don't have to do any order. It just made it easier to call them one and two. That was it. And at the end of this, yeah, it's not the end, well, October, I guess that's essentially the end. At the end of this year, I'm going to be doing a 6-week coaching program, which will be around this new stage. We're coming out of a pandemic, right? Yeah. We need to work out who the hell we are, who you are, what you want. You've definitely probably had time to think. We're going to talk about resilience, confidence, all of the stuff I talk about there, but in the sort of short courses. But those are self-study, which is great for some people. But for this one, I want to show up for 6 weeks. I'll be showing up on once a week, and there'll be stuff for you to do. You'll be doing it with a group, so you'll be supported and stuff through that. So that's something that coaching program is going to be new for this year. So that's coming out as well. So if people type in Holly Matthews, IamHollyMatthews.com is my website. If you type in Holly Matthews into Google and you can't find me, the internet is broken. If you can't find me, then I don't know why you're looking.
That's so annoying, because if I type my name into Google, I get a very famous country singer every time.
Oh, lovely. You should have started that. I love a bit of country.
I know.
Do you know how bad? I was talking to my friend this week I actually, how bad is this? I mean, this makes me sound like such a knob, but I forgot last year, I forgot how old I was, right? I was like, am I 35 or 36? And I Wikipedia'd myself.
No, you didn't. No,
I Wikipedia'd myself. That's outrageous, isn't it? I mean, I'm so Hollywood. Like, who do I think I am?
I don't know who you are.
I don't know. I mean, who am I? Don't know. Okay, you don't. No, well, I don't know my age. That's for a start. I mean, that's ridiculous. So yeah, so there's stuff on there, but listen, I'm sure.
The great thing about Wikipedia, you can change it. So if you ever feel like taking a few years off yourself, there you go.
And I won't even know I've done. I won't remember, because I'm clearly not very good at remembering things. I'll forget that I did. I think I'm 21. Lovely. How perfect.
Happy birthday.
So happy birthday me. So people, I'm hoping that from listening to this, your listeners will be able to see that I am very approachable and real, and I will not, in terms of coaching, people can work with me one-on-one. It's more expensive for people to work with me one-on-one, because it's my proper time. However, if you work with me one-on-one, you get my full undivided attention. Yeah. We're going to work on some shit. Okay. So my clients that I work with at the moment, they tend to stick with me because they want accountability. They want to work on things. And
but you can tell that, like, even just having this conversation with you, like, I can tell how kind of, not intense, that makes it sound as if it's a bad thing, but like how kind of driven and kind of how, you know, involved you actually are, and how passionate you are about, you know, people being the best version of themselves. So it's, I think I'm definitely going to take something from this. So I know for a fact a lot of other people are.
Well, I really hope so. For me, look, at the end of the day, we are here for this much time. We're here for such a short space and in this earth. Whatever you believe about an afterlife or you don't, right? I personally have no belief in an afterlife. That's okay if you do. There's no judgment. We don't know the answers. But for me, on this realm, we're here for a short space of time. So we have to do something that makes us feel good. That's
it. For a good time, not a long time.
Exactly. So, and that's it. So people can come and chat to me. I'm nice, like, I'm all right, and so I will tell you how it is, but I'll do it in the nicest possible way.
And bloody drop them coals, everyone.
Everyone, let go of the coals. I mean, I can't believe, as a Geordie, I'm talking about coal mining, aren't I? I mean, that's the same. Talk about coal.
Got to work with what you've got, haven't you?
Well, we don't even have that anymore. No. Not these days. Thatcher and all that. Oh God. Where have we gone?
We're not going there. I mean, there's like waffle shop, but I can't. I draw the line. I will waffle about anything, but not politics.
Keep it out.
I am in complete awe of you, and I'm so grateful that you took the time to obviously come and have a waffle with me. Like, I hate using this word, but you're actually a really inspiring person to me. So I'm so grateful that I got the chance to kind of have this time.
I've loved it. Thank you.
Anytime. Welcome back. Literally, just give me a shout, have a waffle. But thank you so much for joining me.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, you've been listening to the Waffle Shop podcast. Huge thank you to my very special guest this week, the incredible Holly Matthews. Don't forget to check her out on social media. If you've liked the episode and you like what you're hearing, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, and I'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You've been listening to the Waffle Shop podcast with me, Taylor James. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and even leave a review. It means the world to me. See you soon.